dollars and banks and earnings. Oh, my.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. Happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiatakis. No, Toto, that man behind the curtain is new to BankUnited. He's one of the regulators who just took it over. And forget Oz, there's a storm of skepticism that's affecting the greenback today. That's ahead. Now, where's Wall Street? S&P 500 shares down about a third of a percent right now. The NASDAQ down 0.5%. The Dow pretty much flat, down about 0.2%. Asian markets closed lower today for the most part. The Nikkei fell under 0.5%. And the Bank of Japan today said the economy there is still deteriorating, but exports and production are getting better. European shares are mostly up right now. Let's check in with Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. He joins us live from New York. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Thanks for being with us this morning. The Fed says banks haven't been borrowing as much from its emergency loan program this week, and that investment firms took a pass for the first time since September. What does that tell us, Sam, about a recovery?
Well, that's actually a good thing, in my opinion, because it implies that the lending freeze is starting to thaw and that banks are now willing to lend to one another. Because let's face it, it's like borrowing. You'd rather borrow from your siblings than from your parents, so they would rather borrow from each other than from the Fed.
Federal regulators seized Florida's BankUnited yesterday. That's 34 bank failures this year, Sam. We're not even halfway through 2009, and there were 25 in all of last year. Can the economy absorb all these failures?
Oh, certainly I think they can. I think there's more than 100 banks that are on the FDIC watch list right now, and I think it's simply a reminder of how things are different today than they were in the 1930s when we did not have an FDIC, and all those banks that did go under this time would not have been able to pay back depositors if we did not have the FDIC.
Quickly, Sam, so the greenback's hurting today against foreign currencies. What's behind all that?
Several things. I believe people are getting a little worried about the credit worthiness of the U.S. In terms of the increased debt. But at the same time, they're realizing that they're not going to be getting much money investing here in the U.S., so they're looking elsewhere.
A lot of chatter. You're right. A lot of chatter out there. Sam Stovall, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. British Airways has suffered the biggest loss in its history. In its fiscal year that ended in March, the airline lost about $600 million. But there may be a silver lining for the company. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, reports.
BA calls the figures an excellent reflection of just how bad the global economy has become. The airline's usually most lucrative sector was hit particularly hard. Business and first-class traffic fell by 13%. Cargo and economy class were also down. The airline sees no signs of recovery in any of its markets this year or next. But aviation analyst Howard Wealdon says BA could now win approval for its planned alliance with American Airlines.
Given the intrinsic weaknesses in the airline industry, I think the regulators will see this as the right way to go forward. I'm sensing that there's a better expectation that this time this alliance will forge through.
BA can also look forward to lower fuel costs this year after last year's $4.5 billion bill. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Magna International emerged today as the early favorite to acquire General Motors' Opel unit. German officials said the Canadian car parts group had submitted a better plan than rivals Fiat and RHJ. And Italy's Fiat today said job losses in Europe would be somewhere around 10,000 if its bid is accepted for Opel and Britain's Vauxhall. That's far less, it says, than earlier thought. You're hearing the Morning Report on Friday, May 22nd, 2009 at Marketplace.org. The dollar's getting hammered today against some major world currencies. It's a reaction to fears the United States could lose its top-notch credit rating. The UK got a warning about its debt status yesterday. Here's Marketplace's Janet Babin from North Carolina Public Radio.
The UK has held on to its Gold Star credit status since the 70s. And here in the US, we've been AAA rated since the 1940s. Losing the top rating is a signal that a country could default on its debts. It makes it cost more to borrow money, and a downgrade could prompt global investors to dump U.S. Treasury bonds. But most analysts believe such a downgrade is unlikely, and that even with these concerns, the economy is improving. One sign of recovery, U.S. banks reduced borrowing this past week from the Federal Reserve's emergency loan program, and investment firms didn't borrow anything at all. It's the first time that's happened since early September. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Oil's above $61 a barrel again today. Investors apparently hedging against inflation and that weakening U.S. dollar. And the price of gas is up, too. The national average at about $2.36 a gallon, according to AAA. But that's not stopping people from embarking on some Memorial Day journeys. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
At a gas station in Los Angeles, Aaron McCall is filling up at $2.87 a gallon. That high price tag isn't stopping her from going on a fishing trip this weekend.
It's still better than it used to be, so it still seems like it's cheap enough to travel because, you know, a few months ago it was just horrible.
And Rushir Kadakia says it won't get much worse. He's a global oil market expert at Cambridge Energy Research Associates.
More than likely, what the consumer's feeling moving into the summer, these are probably going to be the high prices that they feel throughout the entire summer.
Kadakia says the price of gas has been rising along with the price of a barrel of oil, and oil has been bubbling up as the stock market has rallied. Kadakia says it's all about expectations of a turnaround in the world economy.
Oil prices can move up in sympathy with the equity market, but at some point, the fundamentals tend to catch up.
And Kadakia says right now the fundamentals are low demand and high supply. He says it's quite possible the price of gas will drop as the summer goes on. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Maybe the heat of the summer causes people to talk on the phone more, or there's a little more spare time to go cell phone shopping. Whatever the case, companies are rolling out some new high-tech devices that could make smart the new tan. Here's Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith.
Last week, T-Mobile introduced its new Sidekick. AT&T unveiled the Samsung Jack. Palm is about to release the much-anticipated Pre. Oh, and the new iPhone is on the way. Welcome to the smartphone wars.
We're getting ready for another exciting summer.
Telecom analyst Jeff Kagan says don't expect big discounts. This won't be a price war. It's more like a my phone is smarter than your phone war. And here's how smart smartphones have become. You can use them to text message, watch TV, surf the internet, all at warp speed. Kagan says even now, people are willing to pay up for the shiny new gadgets.
If this economy happened 10 years ago, people would have canceled the cell phone and they would have kept using their traditional landline phone. But today, it's completely reversed. We're seeing people keep their cell phones, and if they have to, they're canceling their regular phone.
Sales of smartphones, which can cost several hundred dollars, are growing about 20% annually. They're expected to make up two-thirds of all cell phone sales by the end of the year. Ross Rubin studies the industry for the NPD Group.
As the value of the internet has grown to consumers, they are looking for ways to stay connected, even when they're away from a computer.
And the phone companies are looking to keep them connected to pricey long-term contracts. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Atlantic City, New Jersey is on a losing streak. Profits at the casinos there were down 38% in the first quarter. A big factor in that decline has been new gambling halls in nearby Pennsylvania. The latest casino opens to the public today in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Preservationists are betting it can help turn the former Bethlehem Steelworks into a showcase for America's industrial history, as Joel Rose reports.
The casino is officially called the Sands Casino Resort Bethlehem, but when this was a working plant, it went by a shorter name.
You didn't work at Bethlehem Steel, you worked at Steel, okay? That was how this is referred to.
Charlie Martin worked at the Steel for 40 years as an engineer. Now he's a consultant for the National Museum of Industrial History, which is renovating this former electrical shop. When Bethlehem Steel declared bankruptcy 8 years ago, it left behind a toxic landscape with cavernous workshops and rusting equipment. Martin says that scared off a lot of developers, but not the Sands.
Someone had to come along with deep pockets to take on the chore of initial redevelopment of the site, and they seem to be able to do it.
Since buying the site 2 years ago, Sands has poured $740 million into a brand new casino. Company officials weren't available to comment for this story, but when they applied for a state gaming license, they did talk a lot about preserving the most visible structures on the site, including the iconic 20-story blast furnaces.
If those furnaces begin to decay, and they will in the open air without use, they're going to be dangerous to visitors.
Howard Gillette teaches history at Rutgers University in Camden. He says Bethlehem is the ideal place to chart the rise and fall of the steel industry.
But you can't really interpret those buildings unless they're preserved, and that's where the rub is going to come. There's going to have to be more money, and where will it come from? I'm not sure.
The Sands has donated land to the city and local nonprofits. So far, preservationists seem to be giving the casino the benefit of the doubt. Ted Harlan is the Industrial Museum's CFO.
What we've seen and heard, many of their actions are certainly headed towards preservation. Whether the financial and economic realities allow them to do that, we don't know.
Sands officials have talked about reusing some older factory buildings for retail and residential projects, but for now, those plans are on hold. In Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
It's May, and for the college crowd, it's graduation time, cause for celebration, and time for harsh reality. That is the mountain of debt that's accumulated for those who are finishing up. While repayment can be a big burden, commentator Robert Reich says he has an idea that might make it a little easier.
The average young person now graduating from college has to repay almost $22,000 of student loans. That's a record, partly because college costs have continued to rise even during the downturn, and because other sources of college funding have taken big hits, like home equity loans and 529 plans that allowed families to sock money away for college. But how can young people repay this much money when the job market is so bad? The law doesn't allow college loans to be discharged in personal bankruptcy. Even when they do find jobs, college grads have no choice but to take the job that pays the most. They can't afford to do what they really might want to do, become, say, a social worker or writer or legal services attorney. Now, this problem won't go away when the economy recovers. College debt burdens have been rising for years, and the career choices of many newly minted graduates are narrowing to those that help repay college loans. We need a new system. So here's my proposal. Any college student can get full funding from the government with only one string attached. Once they've graduated and are in the workforce, they pay 10% of their incomes for the first 10 years of full-time work into the same government fund they drew on to finance their college education. Now, maybe this formula will need to be adjusted up or down to cover all the costs, and surely some people will game the system, as they do every other one. But the essential idea is that linking the cost of college to subsequent wages makes college affordable to everyone, and linking repayment to a fixed percentage of wages for a limited number of years enables all graduates to follow their dreams into whatever work they want, without worrying about earning enough to repay a loan. Those who end up in relatively high-paying jobs subsidize those who end up in relatively low-paying ones. It's fair, it's simple, and good for society as well as the individual. So happy graduation!
Robert Reich teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. So, loaded with school loans and don't know what to do? Maybe you've got it all figured out? Tell us about it at our website, marketplace.org. We got the scratch pad there, our online host and blogger, Scott Jago, there as well, inside our website. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Have a nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.